Morning, everyone. On behalf of the Illinois Power Agency, I'd like to welcome everyone to today's Bidder Information Workshop. This workshop is regarding the procurement of renewable energy credits pursuant to the initial forward procurement to procure RECs from new projects for the portfolio of the Ameren Illinois Company, Commonwealth Edison Company, and the Mid-American Energy Company. This RFP is also known as the Wind and Solar RFP. Today's workshop is focused on the draft REC contract. This is the second round of supplier comments, and this workshop is focused on explaining the changes between the first and second draft. My name, again, is Benjamin Chee. I'm with NERA Economic Consulting. NERA is the procurement administrator for the IPA, and joining me today is Dr. Chantal Lacasse, also with NERA. As we start off today's presentation, just want to focus you on a couple of items up front. As you'll see, some of the logos on the bottom of the slide. We'll use some of these short names throughout the presentation. IPA for the Illinois Power Agency, Ameren Illinois, or AIC, for the Ameren Illinois Company, ComEd for the Commonwealth Edison Company, MEC for the Mid-American Energy Company, and NERA as the procurement administrator. One more housekeeping item that is found on slide 2. If you have any questions throughout the presentation, I ask that you submit them to the presenters. To do so, simply locate the Q&A on the right side of your screen. Select all panelists in the ask box, type in your question, reference any slide numbers that may be relevant, and click send to submit your questions. There is also a chat function that you may use for technical issues, and we ask that you limit submitting technical related questions through the chat function. But all other questions dealing with today's presentation to go through the Q&A function. Please take note that there is a procurement website that is the central source of information for the procurement events, and the website address is provided at the bottom of this slide 2, ipa-energyrfp.com. The presentation materials, including this presentation as well as the contracts that we referenced, and all questions and answers that we provide on this workshop will be posted as FAQs on the procurement website. We'll start off with a couple of general information, including changes on the schedule and process so that you are kept abreast of where we are and what's going on. And then we will move right into the meat of today's discussion, which is on the draft REC contract, and in particular, the second draft REC contract, for which we are soliciting comments on. We'll talk about the key changes, explain to you what of substance have been changed and what has been clarified that is different from the draft contract version 1. And then we will also end off this discussion with a couple of details regarding the timeline and requirements for this second comment process. The first thing to note is for many of you who have received the invitation to join today's virtual workshop, you might have thought that this is a workshop regarding the RFP process itself. In light of the comments that we have received through the first round of comments, a decision was made late last week to extend the schedule, the RFP schedule, to accommodate a second round of supplier comments on the REC contract. So this is sort of where we are, and the draft REC contract has been posted online this morning. This is June 28, and the comments are due back from you by 6 p.m. Central Time, July 10. In terms of the extension of the RFP and the RFP schedule at large, the final contract is now expected to be posted July 18. We will have another workshop or webcast specific to the RFP process at that point in time. and specifically expected to be held July 19 to explain the requirements and the process. There will be a two-part RFP process. The part one window and the part two windows are provided here. In order for you to participate in the RFP, you must submit something to us by the part one date, which is at noon on August 7. And then the bid date has been pushed out 3 weeks after, from August 10 to now August 31st. I'm laying out for you these key events so that you can prepare and have a heads up of what is coming up next. But again, today's workshop is focused on the contract and explaining the contract terms only, and not on the RFP requirements. And to facilitate your review of what has changed between what we call draft one REC contract and draft two REC contract, we have provided a red line showing changes between the two contract drafts. So we have held a comment process since we have issued the first version of the contract June 1st. We have received your comments on June 14. We have provided you a new draft, a second draft REC contract today, June 28, that incorporates and have considered all the comments that were received. We are starting this process with a second comment process for you to comment on the second draft REC contract. So take note, please do not redline, provide comments on the first REC contract anymore, but download the second draft REC contract. You can find, again, a red line showing the changes to facilitate your review, as well as information regarding the first workshop that was held June 6 to explain the basics and the mechanics of the contract. I will not go over the details of the first draft REC contract or the basics of how the mechanisms work. If you would like, you can download the materials of the first virtual workshop on the procurement website. A few things to highlight for you on this slide 6 is this is also known as the wind and solar RFP. To get to the page where you have the draft documents, you have to look at the left navigation bar, click on wind and solar, and click on draft documents. And from there, you will find all the most relevant information at the top of the page, dated June 28. At the bottom half of the page, we'll have information related to the first virtual workshop, including information on the first draft REC contract. Again, as I said, to facilitate your review, importantly, you should download the red line that shows the incremental changes from the June 1st draft REC contract to where we are right now. I will go over a couple of slides just to bring you up to speed if you are here for the first time in this RFP process. You have not gone through the first round of comments. This is just two or three slides so that you have an idea of how the contract itself is structured, but I will leave the details of which for you to go through if you are interested on the procurement website. So the contract itself is awarded through a competitive bid process, or a request for proposal, as we call it, the RFP. And through that competitive process, you, the seller, will indicate the purchase price, how much you would like to be paid for each REC, and the total number of RECs to be delivered annually from each of your specific projects in your proposal. So this procurement is about procuring RECs from new projects. In particular, the law requires us to procure 1 million RECs annually from utility-scale wind projects, as well as 1 million RECs annually from new utility solar projects, as well as brownfield site photovoltaic projects. Through the RFP process, the winning bids will be associated with specific projects, so the contract is unit-specific. The procurement administrator will then take these winning bids and allocate the RECs from each winning project among the three utilities, AIC, ComEd, and MEC. Take note that as you enter into this project or this process, you, the bidders, must be willing to sign the contracts with each of the three utilities. You do not get to choose who the counterparty would be. And importantly, the IPA, Illinois Power Agency, is not a counterparty to the contracts. The contracts, once they are signed, will govern the relationship for your delivery of the RECs and for the payment of those RECs by the utility. And the contracts will be administered separately by each applicable utility. And importantly, the contract is for the procurement of RECs only. So the utility, they're not buying your projects. The RECs must come from specific projects, but they're not buying your projects. And also, they're not buying the energy that comes out of your projects, just the RECs that are generated from these projects. So I'll start with a disclaimer here, and then I'll jump right into the REC contract itself. So again, the second draft REC contract has been posted this morning for your comments. Any statements that we make on this call that describes or refer to the draft REC contract documents are summaries only and are qualified in their entirety by the draft REC contract documents. The final REC contract that will take into account and consideration your comments is expected to be posted on July 18. Again, we expect the comments to be due to us July 10. We will consider them and post the final contract on July 18. When it becomes available, the final REC contract will be the governing agreement, and you, the bidders, will bear the full responsibility for reviewing and understanding the final REC contract. We'll start here on slide 10 with the REC contract structure. This REC contract is a single document, as you can think of it, that will contain a cover sheet and four exhibits. This REC contract is based on the ABA EMA ACOR REC purchase and sale agreement, also what we call the master REC agreement as reference in the REC contract itself. And the main terms is embodied in what we call the cover sheet. The cover sheet itself is the front part, the front 15, 16 pages of the REC contract itself. And it will contain specific terms related to project requirements, product requirements, delivery requirements, and payment terms. The pricing and quantity details, how much you will get paid, how much, meaning the price in which you will get paid for each REC, as well as the quantity that you are eligible to deliver to the utility under the contract, will all be provided in that cover sheet, and in particular, in Table 1 of the cover sheet. Towards the end of the cover sheet, you'll find modifications to the Master REC Agreement itself as well. The Master REC Agreement, or what we call the ABA EMA ACOR REC Purchase and Sale Agreement, is appended as Exhibit D to the REC contract. Exhibit A, we provide an example of how the delivery year requirement is calculated. Exhibit B contains the guarantee forms. Exhibit C contains the letter of credit forms. This contract is for a 15-year delivery term. To be clear, this contract is for the purchase of RECs from new projects. So what it means is that there will be a period up front in the term of the agreement, not the delivery term, that will allow you to develop the project. Once the project is developed, is installed, it is completed, it is registered with either GETS or MRETS, you enter into a period known as the delivery term. The delivery term is for a full 15 years of REC deliveries, and it will start the later of the date the first REC is issued for the project by GETS or MRETS, or if the project has been energized prior to June 1, 2019 and has its RECs issued by GETS or MRETS prior to then the start of the delivery term shall be June 1, 2019. The date of the first REC issued for the project and delivered to each utility account must occur no later than June 1, 2021. The delivery term, again, is for 15 years of REC deliveries. It's divided into what we call delivery years. A delivery year starts in June of a year, June 1st of a year, and ends on May 31st of the following calendar year. So that's what we call a delivery year. Delivery obligations are accounted for in each delivery year. So you'll find these terms, the term delivery year requirement, to refer to the requirement that you must meet in terms of the number of RECs you must deliver under the contract in each delivery year. Payment and invoicing requirements are on a monthly settlement basis. What it means is that each delivery year is divided into delivery months. Invoices are due by the 10th day after each delivery month, and payments are due by the end of the month where the utility is in receipt of your timely invoices. Some of the key changes, as I have noted earlier, I'm not going over all the meat and potatoes of the contract itself, but I'm just going over at this point the key changes between the draft contract that we posted in June, on June 1, and the contract that we have posted early this morning. I'll start here with some of the most substantive changes made to the contract as it relates to credit requirements. So just take note, the credit requirement has been reduced, and the principal item that how it has been reduced is this item known as the collateral requirement. The collateral requirement was previously set at 150% of the annual contract value from the start of the contract. Once you sign the contract, that is what is due. This amount has since been reduced from 150% to 50% of the annual contract value. This is due to utilities as of the start of the contract term. Once you sign the contracts, this is due to them. And on and after June 1st, 2019, the collateral requirement will increase to 100% of the annual contract value. Basically, it is just the annual contract value. Annual contract value is simply the annual quantity that is in Table 1 of your contract multiplied by the purchase price. The other places in which the credit provisions have changed, and I will move through them in order of this slide, is that performance assurance requirements have a 2 business day turnaround once notice has been sent to you to provide to the utility a letter of credit or cash. This deadline for the delivery of your performance assurance has been extended to 5 business days. The interest on overpayments by the utilities to you have been removed, so that if they do overpay you inadvertently, there will be no interest accrued on that basis. Whereas if there is a late payment, there is a default rate that will accrue. The default interest rate in the prior draft was 1% over the prime lending rate. This has been increased to 4% over the prime lending rate. Cross default provisions have been removed. Two-way termination payments have been removed. Now, the contract features a one-way termination payment where upon an event of default, termination payment will be due only from the non-defaulting from the defaulting party to the non-defaulting party. Netting provisions have been removed, set-off provisions have been removed, and there is a clarification that we have made that a single unsecured credit line will now be granted to credit support providers, but it's now limited only to transactions pursuant to the initial forward procurement. So if you have winning bids and multiple associated with multiple projects, just take note that you will get the unsecured credit pursuant to the contract, but that unsecured credit will be a shared unsecured credit across all of the contracts that is under the initial forward procurement. But it will be tied to the credit support provider, either the seller itself or a guarantor if one is named. You will find a couple of these references on the right side of the slide 13. These references relate, as you see, MRA, short for the Master Rec Agreement, which would note changes in the cover sheet to these very provisions that are found in the Master Rec Agreement as provided in Exhibit D of the Rec Contract. The REC contract itself requires certain specifications related to the project. These are covered in Section 5 of the cover sheet. So I have named some of them on the left side of the screen on slide 14. So some of the project requirements, in fact, most of them are in the law. These are RECs that must come from the projects, and the projects must meet the definition found in the Act. They must meet definitions that they are a utility-scale wind project, utility-scale solar project, or a brownfield site photovoltaic project. It must be a new project where the date of first operation, as recorded by GATS or MRATS, occurred after June 1st, 2017. It must be a project that is located in Illinois, or if it is located adjacent to Illinois, then it must meet specific public interest criteria. If it is a new utility-scale solar or brownfield site photovoltaic project, it must be installed by a qualified person, and at least 50% of the project itself is located on the identified site that has been described in the RFP or through the RFP process. And importantly also, this is not a generating unit whose costs have been or are being recovered through rates. So with the reduction of the collateral requirement up front from 150% to 50%, as a package, if you fail to meet any of these project requirements, this will lead to a termination of the contract, and you will receive a notice from buyer regarding the regarding the termination. You will also lose your collateral requirement at that point. The only nuance or exception to this is if the project is found not to be a generating unit whose costs are being recovered through rates. If this provision is not found to be true, then on top of losing the contract where it will terminate, you will lose the greater of the collateral requirement or 110% of payments you have received from the utility. This provision is in the law itself, and that is why we have provided a separate payment provision related to this. There are also some product requirements. The product itself are the RECs from the project as opposed to the project themselves. So in terms of product requirements, these are standard RECs from specific projects associated with winning bids. You must transfer your RECs to the buyer's GETS or MRETS account. They must be transferred in an unretired state. And the RECs that you transfer to the GETS and MRETS account of the buyer must allow the buyer to comply with Illinois RPS at the time of delivery. In terms of specific timing and delivery obligations, the delivery term starts no earlier than June 1st, 2019, and the first REC must be delivered to the utility account no later than June 1st, 2021. In terms of vintage, and importantly, how we take care of banking, is simply this, is that the RECs that you deliver to the utility's account must be based on the electricity that is generated from your project, either any time during the 15-year delivery term or the additional 2 months prior to the delivery term. So at any one point in time as you deliver your RECs to the utility's account, the RECs may be really old RECs as long as it meets this definition and it allows the buyer to comply with the Illinois RPS. So there are no other banking steps that are required. You can save any excess RECs that you have to be delivered in a shortfall year in the future to meet a subsequent delivery year requirement. That is essentially how flexible the REC contract is and how we take care of banking. In terms of the specific delivery obligations, there is this term known as the delivery year requirement. It is an event of default. If you fail to deliver one REC by June 1st, 2021, and in terms of the obligations during the delivery term, if you fail to meet the delivery year requirement in 3 or more delivery years, and the cumulative shortfall amounts equals or exceeds the annual quantity, that itself will become an event of default. If you have a shortfall year, you cannot withhold or sell or transfer your RECs to another party. If you are found to have withheld your RECs or have sold it to someone else or have transferred the RECs in a shortfall year prior to meeting your delivery year requirement, that is a breach of a representation under the contract. And all of these events are known in the contract as events of default. Your contract will terminate and you will lose your collateral requirement. And the information related to the delivery obligations as well as the product requirements can be found in Section 3 of the cover sheet. Having said that, we have built-in flexibility in the delivery obligations. And some of the changes in the second draft you'll find here on this slide 16. And in particular, we have clarified in the cover sheet in Section 3E, that's where the reference CS S3E comes to play on the top of slide 16. We have clarified, first of all, that the delivery year requirement for the first 365 days of the delivery term is 50% of what it would have been otherwise. You can find a detailed example of this in Exhibit A. A short example used to be found in Section 3E itself. We have moved the entire example to an exhibit on its own. The second place in which we have clarified the terms is on banking. To be very clear, this is found in cover sheet section 3I. Banking is allowed, and the way it works again is there is going to be a delivery year requirement that you have to meet. That is your obligation in each delivery year. Once you meet that delivery year requirement, any excess racks belongs to you. They are your property. You can keep them. You can sell them. You can do anything you want with them. And if you would like to bank them, all you need to do is to keep them, keep these excess racks, and deliver them in the future to meet subsequent delivery year requirements. That's how we deal with banking, and that is all that is required. There are no other requirements, no other steps involved in banking. We have also added a new flexibility in the contract. Now, this is handled in the cover sheet as it amends the Master Rec Agreement, Section 6, dealing with force majeure. RTO curtailment is now a force majeure event. Not all RTO curtailments qualify. There are routine RTO curtailments that occur on a regular basis. We do not consider those to be force majeure events. We do ask that you pay careful attention to where you site your project, because the RTO curtailment cannot be based on an economic curtailment to qualify as a force majeure event. We only consider reliability curtailments by the RTO to qualify. It cannot be claimed in the first 5 delivery years, starting only in delivery year number 6 and onwards. Then we would consider whether you qualify for a force majeure if the RTO curtails your output. To qualify, importantly as well, is that the amount of curtailment in a delivery year must exceed 5% of the annual quantity. And after that point, for example, if the RTO curtailed you in delivery year 6, up to 7% of the annual quantity. What it means then is that the difference, meaning 2% of the annual quantity, is what will be excused from your shortfall amount. And effectively what it means is that it will not count against you in terms of reaching the cumulative of the annual quantity before you get an event of default for not meeting the delivery obligations under the contract. Again, you'll find the details of this in the Master Rec Agreement, Article 6, as modified in the cover sheet. In terms of cost recovery provisions, this is an area for which we have received comments, substantive comments on, and we have modified this provision. The utility cannot pay you if they don't have the money to do so. If they cannot recover the cost from ratepayers, then the contract at that point will be subject to a suspension rather than a termination. So how we have modified the provisions related to this compared with the first draft is that there used to be a payment clawback provision in the first draft that has now been removed. At the point where the buyer, the utility, is not able to recover its costs to pay you, they will not claw back payments that have already been paid out to you. That's the first change in the contract. The other change in the contract is that instead of a termination straight away, what we do now is that the buyer will provide notice to you, the seller, and at that point of the notice that there is a disallowance or an inability to recover the costs, then the obligations will be suspended rather than terminated. So the delivery obligations will be suspended, the payment obligations will be suspended until buyer is able to recover the costs. During the time of the suspension, you, the seller, may sell or transfer your racks to third parties. If the suspension lasts over a year, the seller has the right to terminate the contract after the 365-day suspension period. If the suspension lasts for 2 years, then the buyer has the right to terminate the contract after 730 days of suspension if they still cannot recover their costs at that point in time. And to be clear, in such an event, while we terminate the contract, there will be no settlement amounts or termination payments due to either party. Other changes that we have made to the contract include in the cover sheet section 3 and 5, as well as in section 5.1 of the master rack agreement, the elimination of these automatic termination provisions. So there were a couple of events of default for which we used to have these triggers of termination that are automatic. At this point, they have been removed to allow for a notice period so that buyer can send a notice to seller, and seller may respond within that 5-day notice period to demonstrate that such an event of default has not occurred. In the Master Rack Agreement, Section 9.7, dealing with the confidentiality provisions, we have expanded the confidentiality provisions to allow for communications with not just lenders, but prospective lenders, not just guarantors and financing partners that are existing, but prospective ones as well. In the definition of bankruptcy or bankrupt, the cure period has been extended for involuntary bankruptcy from 30 days to 60 days. This is found in Section 1.7 of the Master Rack Agreement. And in the definition of environmental attributes, this is found in the Master Rack Agreement, Section 1.27. We now make clear that environmental attributes that belong to the buyer do not include tax credits or incentives, deductions, or benefits that are reserved exclusively for the seller. Other clarifications we have made more globally throughout the contract include clarity surrounding some of the terms that use the language of a purchase order or confirmation. To be clear, the rack agreement is for one transaction only, which is tied to the specific project for which racks can come out of for responding to the obligations and requirements under this contract. We don't envision multiple transactions under one master, so that construct is not there, and there will be no racks from other projects involved, no replacement racks involved. So we made that clear in different places in the cover sheet to make sure that it is clear to both parties that all references to a purchase order or confirmation refers to the terms laid out in the cover sheet itself. So with that, I will now talk about the process for which we are soliciting comments. So comments are solicited for all sections of the rack agreement, especially on the changes that we have made, to the extent that those changes that you have comments on that, or if you see that they should be modified to account for something that we may not have thought of, that's most valuable to us. The deadline is on July 10th by 6 p.m. that's Central Time. And importantly, we ask that you download the Draft 2 REC contract, the second version, dated today, June 28, from the procurement website, that you will mark your comments with track changes in Microsoft Word format. Please do not give us a PDF copy of your document. Please send it to us in Word format. Include any explanatory notes or comments to explain your proposed changes, but certainly redline with specific language so that we know how to implement your changes. So again, if you just simply redline without giving us a note, we may not understand why you're making the changes that you're proposing. That's one. And two, if all you're doing is commenting on specific portions without giving us a red line, that is not very useful to us. We ask that you do both. Provide us a red line with specific language changes, as well as provide a little bit of an explanatory note so that we understand why you're making those changes. Once you have that, simply email your Word document to us at this email address, illinois-rfp@nira.com. by the deadline, again, of 6 p.m. Central Time, July 10. We have provided a couple of documents to supplement that online. Those are provided for your review and to facilitate this process. There are red lines showing, importantly, the draft changes from version 1 and version 2 of the draft REC contract. Please look at those red lines. That is a PDF posted at the top of that page. There are also acceptable modifications that you can make to the guarantee documents. Those are posted separately as standalone documents at this time on the website, right below the draft REC contract. We ask that you review those as well if you're using a guarantor. Importantly, if you are finding these optional changes to be acceptable, we do not need to see your changes to the form of guarantee. You can use them on an optional basis. Only if you do not see changes that you think are necessary in the guarantee, we ask that you provide us a red line to the guarantee after you have reviewed the list of optional changes that are available online. So with that, I will conclude the presentation portion of this workshop.